Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favorite podcasts from Off
First
the Ball.
2010 is, I think, the final. Because I would have been 8 years old, and I remember watching the final, and my whole family was in the sitting room. And I think we were shouting for Spain.
You're the Vuvuzela generation.
Yeah.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
A full house of everybody, and no one's left standing. Westmeath are gone, Donegal are gone. We were gone a long time ago.
Not so much of a shock, I suppose.
For Westmeath that they ran out of legs eventually.
Yeah, I think it was going to happen at some stage. I think the bonus territory for Westmeath came when they ended up in the All-Ireland Series itself. And the goal to start of the year would have been to get in there one way or another. That didn't happen when they didn't get out of league. It happened when they got to the provincial final. Then to go one step further and win the provincial final, get back to Mullingar, have a big homecoming,
yeah,
and come out on the right side of it. Like, usually when you're off the back of a loss, it takes a couple of days to sort of be... to reflect on the year and be like, no, that was great.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to take
about 40 minutes after, you're like, ah, look.
Yeah, do you know what? Yeah, and the game sort of played out how I imagined it would. Westmeath have got it. I'm sure everyone has their injuries, you know, with the turnaround, the condensed season, all that sort of stuff. But I'd be surprised if there's a team in the country that has as many high profile injuries as Westmeath have at the minute. And that sort of seemed to just catch up with them in the last maybe 25 minutes of the game yesterday.
I think in terms of the number of leaders who are missing and the, you know, the scoring and fetching out around the middle and all the stuff that's really important.
You can do the next man up thing is great, but when it becomes the next man up to the next man up to the next man up, you're going, that's not totally fair on lads. And like, you know, I say life's not fair, don't get me wrong, and it's a great opportunity for a lot of lads. Young James Mitchell came in the goals yesterday, made his championship debut in Clonus, and the first thing he had to do was fetch a Rory Beggan kick out on his 21, and fetch it he did. So they'll be in better stead next year. Only slight caveat is that there is still a fairly high likelihood that Westmeath end up in the Tailteann Cup next year, given the fact they're going to be in Division 3.
He's very positive this morning, considering I did drag him kicking and screaming into the studio.
I did try my best not to be in there, but it's been too long.
Do you want me in this morning?
Yeah, I usually don't ask. I escaped the Galway defeat last week. I was out of the country for that, but I was firmly in the country yesterday.
We get to Donegal in the performance rankings. Not to say about them in advance now.
We'll save it for the performance ranks. That's the
New Zealand were beaten 3-1 overnight, and Wyndham Clark managed not to stuff up in spectacular fashion. He nearly stuffed up, but he didn't, so he won the Open. And that's about the most important sports news. So we just get down to business?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Performance rankings.
The good.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
The bad.
I'm scratching my head. The performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber.
Off the Ball's performance rankings.
Yeah, we'll start with the aforementioned Donegal, I guess. Dublin dump Donegal out of the championship. Not going to say it's a shock. This is not too much of a shock.
It is a shock.
100%.
It is a shock.
What are the odds? What are the odds pre-throwing? What are the odds? 6-1 or something like that.
Was it?
It was a big result for Dublin. Big result for Dublin.
Such a big result, they've put them on the front page of the Irish Times. Which, of the actual paper, not the sports section.
Yeah.
But Dublin are back. That's it now. It's official. They never went away, you know.
They never went away, you know.
It takes a really good team to beat this version of Dublin, I must say.
Look, I thought Dublin deserved to win, and they were by far and away the better team throughout the entirety of the game. Donegal never really got going, vulnerable at the back as they have been all year, not much coming off the bench as it has been all year.
But he left Ryan McHugh on the bench until half time and didn't really work for them, did it? The second half injection didn't happen.
No, I don't know. This Donegal team have just looked tired the entirety of the season, except for that one Kerry game. Outside of the league, they've done nothing. Lost 3 times. So it comes as a shock, but is it really a shock if you look at their form throughout the year? If Down are able to beat Donegal...
Cork
are able to beat Donegal at home.
Still had
Dublin
them
should be able to beat Donegal as well.
I still had them in the top three favourites for the All-Ireland, regardless of those results. Maybe that was a bit naive, but like just the talent and the depth in their squad, they still shouldn't be losing 3 games outside of the league. That's poor.
Oh, it's really poor.
Really bad season.
They would have been probably outside of Kerry and Armagh before Galway started getting going, the, you know, second or third favourite for the All-Ireland title this year. Now they're gone.
Mm.
And they have been really disappointing. And I don't know, is it because they put too many eggs in the basket of the league, which is very unusual for Jim McGuinness to do? They didn't get going in Ulster, didn't get going in the All-Ireland at all. So deservedly knocked out yesterday. Shall we take some of Jim McGuinness?
Go for it.
So we have Jim McGuinness here speaking to Tommy Rooney. Tommy Rooney flying no kites this week. But Jim basically said what all Donegal fans were thinking, in that, you know, the championship just didn't get going and the tired legs were probably the fault of it.
We spoke about it, Tommy, in the dressing room, that we were going to be in a battle today. We could beat last weekend. That will always have an impact on the group. And we just said this is going to be a battle. And if it is a battle, it is a battle. If things go well for us, then things go well for us. But expect to be in a battle. So there was nobody thinking anything other than that at half time, and even, you know, at extra time, going into the last phases of the game, just trying to stay in the game and manage the game. But it does become, it's not a game anymore. Like, it's just chaos. You're trying to get fellas in, you're trying to get fellas out. Who's got what in the tank, and you're trying to manage a multitude of things at that stage. You know, and so there's so much up in the air at that stage. All control is gone. If you want a better word, all control is gone. And then obviously we had a couple of big men on the sideline as well that kind of, you know, disrupted everything we spoke about at halftime.
Just to go back to last weekend, like, even look at Armagh, the last seconds they lost it against Loudoun. I think you were in control with a couple minutes to go, maybe against Cork. It had such a defining impact on the two of you this week in terms of, I suppose, energy and maybe even confidence.
Yeah, no, absolutely, 100%. Like, and there was a lot of decisions in that game, like, you know, that were sort of marginal and they could have went either way. And if they didn't go the other way, that you're in the quarter final, and that's reality. But you know, that's football at the minute. There's, you know, there'll be a sad story every day if we go down that road. That's just the reality. It's not as straightforward as it was. There's no line of form anymore, Tommy. That day's gone. It's, as I say, it's about arriving in the right moment and trying to make it happen. We've seen that last year through the championship, and we're seeing it this year as well.
Just the last one. You bring it back to extra time, and it's a great boost for you going in. Did you know or suspect that Martin McNally was going to dish out four black cards? I know you can't know for sure, but that was a huge blow losing Michael Murphy and Jason.
No, Lee. Definitely no. No, we didn't know. We didn't know, in the sense that it's all up in the air. Something can happen here, you know. So yeah, there was a number of people involved in that, and you just have to wait to see what decisions are going to be made before you go about. So no, you can't legislate for that. All you can do is assume and then put the game plan together, and then 30 seconds later, your game plan's up in the air.
I did see somebody ask the very excellent question. You have a vague sense something's going to happen. You have a fair idea Murphy's going to be involved in it because he starts. That's at the end of the game. Before the extra time starts, new team sheets need to be issued. If they'd named him as a sub, would he have been blackcarded as a sub and been unavailable to come on? And would they have been able to keep a 14th man on?
Yeah.
Likewise, could Dublin do it? It sounds stupid, right? On the face of it, you're like, well, no, you couldn't do that. But how does the referee respond if it's like, sorry, that guy isn't on my team sheet? It's essentially, you're allowed to name an entirely new 15. I don't know what the rules are for that. Was there wiggle room for some dark arts on either side?
I think Eamon Fitzmaurice mentioned that on the commentary, that they could, in theory, have done that.
And is there no way around that? It's because it feels like it's... if this is going to be something that we... This is the first time we've seen this, right?
Mm, yeah.
The brawl leads to black card. 13 side football, by the way, is class.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, can we all agree? In Croker as well.
Yeah, so, it's like, wow, look at the space here. This is what a sport this is.
I don't think anybody who's ever played a 13-a-side game would agree with you there.
But we can still watch on.
Great to watch, terrible to play.
I'd be intrigued, but I know it was, having watched the replays back, it was quite obvious who, like, I suppose, the protagonists of the coming together, for want of a better term, was. I would just be slightly cautious about the... Because it happened in Killarney as well, at halftime. When the Micheál Byrne stuff happened and all that, and there was no action taken, and I get it, you want to quell the situation, you want to send them in to the dressing room, let it calm down, then when they come back out, we'll give the punishment, you go from there. I just would be slightly wary.
It seems unfair.
Yeah, it's unfair to point, and I get, right, yeah, you've put yourself in that position by doing it, but I'd like to think that there's nothing going on at halftime whereby...
They're going in and watching TV.
Yeah, yeah. I really, and I know you come to the right decision, that's fine, but I just wouldn't be I wouldn't be too keen on that being the done thing, or it being done and people not knowing it, you know. Mm.
Yeah.
Did you find it slightly unusual that Kieran Kilkenny didn't get black carded?
I didn't actually. No. Unless Kilkenny said something.
Well, he clearly did.
Well, I don't know if he did.
Well, you don't know that.
I would actually, I would say he probably didn't. But
so on the balance probability, it's possible he didn't. It's also, yeah. there's, you know.
The fair chance he did, fair chance he didn't.
Yeah, so, but can you give somebody, because he actually does not respond.
No.
No.
It's
incredible self-control.
Is it Scully who trips?
When Murphy goes to Kenny, Scully gives him a bit of a nudge and he's like, the way from him.
Yeah, and like, yeah. Look, that was what he got black carded for. Yeah. And, you know, you'd have to say letter of the law. But at the same time, like, are you supposed to watch one of your pals get...
No, you're not.
You are, though. That's the rules, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's ridiculous.
They're not going to. I actually thought, like, Donegal should have went in into the dressing rooms with, like, you know, the motivation that they just pulled this game back from absolutely nowhere. Like, they looked like they were done. But instead, they were going into dressing rooms, you know, Dublin were amped up again because they riled them up. I felt like that was actually just a wrong decision from Michael Murphy to go and... go at Kieran Kilkenny like that, because they should have been going into the dressing rooms with their heads held high, and then obviously they know that Michael Murphy's going to miss the next 10 minutes or so. I really thought he let them down there, to be honest. I understand that he's hyped up, he's kicked a really important score, but it just, in hindsight, it was a terrible decision.
Well, Dublin come out and score 4 unanswered points in the first half of extra time. Sean Guyton comes off the bench, scores 3 of them. And the game's on his head. Like, the game was won at halftime at extra time.
What did you make of the ending to full time and the free being brought forward?
What was he thinking?
He thought it was Ross McGarry.
Yeah.
He thought he had won the free. Which is like,
it's a regard. Like, the rule's a rule, and it has been applied fairly thoroughly all year. If you don't give the ball back,
has it?
There's been several games that have been decided at this point now.
Yeah, but why is it being applied so rigorously right at the end of games and maybe not so much right in the middle of games?
I think maybe it's just more obvious at the end of the games.
It happens more rarely than it should do.
Mm.
And it is noticeable that it is at the end of games. I don't think there's not too much complaints in that you can hear. And maybe the bit where he thought he won the free, maybe that's the explanation.
Jerry was saying that after the game.
That's what happened to Comer. It got moved forward. Yeah. And like, the one thing I would say is he didn't actually have the ball in his hands. No. He got done for blowing it. So in that instance, does he have to hand it back?
Yeah.
But if he doesn't have it.
He's also on the ground.
Who's he handing? Yeah,
the rule is you have to hand it back.
Like, I thought he didn't actually have it.
You have the ball.
He touched it. Here's the whistle. Picks it up. And then puts it down. I think...
I personally thought it was incredibly harsh. I think the rule itself... A lot of people really hate that rule. I don't think the rule is a dreadful rule. I think it has good intentions. I just think sometimes...
That would have been an all-out brawl under the previous rules. Because it was in Dublin's interest to turn it into an all-out brawl.
Yeah. He would have sat on that ball.
Yeah, and we wouldn't have even got anything. Maybe justice was done anyway in the end.
I think it definitely
maybe
was.
Yeah. Kind of cosmic justice for the 12 weeks.
To them for coming back after that, because a lot of teams would have just dropped their heads after that. Mm-hmm. Like, that could have been the end of them there, but to come back in extra time.
How back are they?
I think this...
Who wants to play them next?
I think this is a success for them, this in itself. Like, they don't have to go and win another game, in my mind, because they were not expected to get this far.
Conn's injury at the end.
Yeah.
Like Langan's injury in the second half, or was it in the first half? You're going, whatever happens to these two teams, if those players are not available next week.
They were the two best players on the pitch.
It's not a good scenario for either side to be playing without them. And Conn was holding his hamstring. So you'd be like, oof. You know, he'll be named to start no matter what. But will he be the full version of himself, or will he be a bit of a decoy? Hopefully he's a full version of himself, because he's back. He's back and he was right.
He's ridiculous, yeah. They're a different team with him too. Completely different team.
Yeah.
Well, Donegal are going the red, I believe.
Donegal in the red, Dublin in the green.
You better believe.
In the green, yeah.
That's it.
I think so. Right. Next up, we have Monaghan. The Monaghan men do it again. They're through to an All-Ireland quarterfinal.
Class, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're like a middleweight puncher who never stops.
Mm. And they have, I think it'd be fair to say they've got the best 2-point threat in the country as well. Like, not just Rory Beggin, like Ryan Woods. They've got Desi Ward, Jack McCarron. They've got 5 or 6 different players who are so, Micheál McCarville kicked a ridiculous 2-pointer as well yesterday. I think they scored, the half-time it was 15 points to 2-9. Obviously, which is level, but Monin, 10 of Monin's points had come from 2-pointers, 3 of which were Rory Beggin 2-point frees. So there's an obvious way to avoid letting Monin into a game, which seems to be what had been happening, where they were down by a considerable margin in a lot of their games because they hadn't been given the license to kick those 2-pointers. But by God, when you give them any sniff of a 2-pointer, they're well able to kick it. And they've got searing pace in that team as well. There was one stage in the second half, a ball broke in the middle of the field. Matthew Whitaker came onto it, who is electric, one of the best ball carriers in the country. He is carrying a bit of an injury, but he seemed like he was in, bearing in down on goal. And Killian Neville came from absolutely nowhere, plucked the ball from underneath him, caught it, turned, they went up the other end, and Monaghan went up the other end and scored a point. So they've got threats everywhere. And it seems like they're coming to a stage, like, obviously, granted, Bobby McCall out injured. I'm sure they've 1 or 2 others, but it seems like they're on the right side of injuries in terms of players coming back. I know we spoke before the show, obviously, about Rory Beggin going off with that dead leg.
Sorry, that is a total. That ruins everything. Absolutely. If he's not at full tilt. Because if he's at full tilt, they're going to fancy everybody.
Yeah,
totally.
Maybe Galway are the one team that nobody who played this weekend wants to get next weekend. But other than that, Monaghan will be like, yeah, okay, we'll take you. Show us what you got.
Mm.
We had a conversation with Tommy, I think maybe it might have been, was it last week or the week before, when he was talking about how those players coming back from injury, somebody else either in the comments or got in touch with us to say it's actually 18 months that a lot of these players haven't played that much ball, and now they're cresting into a level of fitness that we're only beginning to see exactly what they're capable of. You win 3 games in a row and suddenly you feel like you've got confidence. Now, they were all at home. So
That's the only thing. They've played pretty much every game in Clonus. But, like, you look at Monaghan, and there's been a lot of talk about all the provincial champions being knocked out now, bar Kerry, obviously. But Monaghan have beaten 2 of them. And Monaghan themselves, they go to extra time in their own provincial final. So I don't know what point that makes, really, but it's just Monaghan have beaten...
Back door, front door,
And Monaghan in the championship, their league was a disaster on paper. Stephen O'Hanlon spoke yesterday after the game about how he actually feels as though they weren't as bad as they were being made out to be. And there's a lot of lads, because they obviously didn't have a lot of their panel at the beginning. The Scotland lads weren't really there. And if they had have had their entire panel, there would have been lads on the outskirts that maybe wouldn't have got the minutes in the league playing in Division 1. And it's maybe benefiting them now that those lads did manage to get thrown in the deep end, you know. And it's easy to say when you're winning, but they are winning. So
yeah. and playing really good football.
Yeah, they are.
They're unreal. But I suppose the one caveat you could probably throw in is that now that we've seen Armagh get absolutely trounced at Kerry, the teams that Monaghan have beaten, you know, they're 50-50 games. We need to see Monaghan up against
Galway.
Or Kerry.
I thought Armagh were brilliant that day in the Ulster final. They took them to extra time, as Matthew said. Like, I don't know. I think they played most of those teams at their... at their peak, probably barring Westmead at the weekend.
Like, they beat the Connacht champions as well, Roscommon.
Yep.
Although, like, the thing about Roscommon is they weren't tested outside of Connacht and they came up short again, and that was always going to be the test for Roscommon this year. So I'm not trying to do down what Monaghan have achieved here, but there are sort of caveats.
Now, you wouldn't be totally sold on them yet, but they're definitely trending in the right direction. And I would probably say the teams who are on the other side of the draw would be probably looking to avoid.
Definitely, yeah.
Like, I mean, the first half last year they played Donegal in an All Ireland quarter final and they absolutely blew them out of the water. Yeah.
They can catch anybody.
Yeah, they were up by, they must have been up by 8 or 10 points, I think. It was the same day Tyrone beat Dublin. Yeah. But you'd imagine now, maybe off the back of that experience last year, maybe not being able to see out that game, they might learn from that a wee bit and might be able to stick it out a bit more.
Do
we think Jim McGuinness is going to stick around for another year? And if not, then does that mean the Westmeath manager Mark McHugh will be?
I really hope
he can go.
I reckon they just give Jim another decade.
It's Fadhan, Trusso, Kilcar, Goody, Mullingar. What's the Irish for that?
Just Mullingar, is it?
Yeah, Mullingar.
Mullingar. You just say it in a Westmeath accent.
It's Mullingar. Yeah, G-C-E-A-R-R.
Yeah, maybe. I think Jim originally was a 3-year project, so he'll be going into his 3rd year now.
I'll leave Mark alone anyway.
I'm being totally facetious here. We really want Jim McGuinness to say we really want Mark McHugh to be the Westmeath manager next year.
We actually have some Mark McHugh speaking at the weekend as well. He was speaking to Jonathan Higgins, which I feel like they've built up some weird relationship over the course of the year. Every single time after the game, it's Jonathan is speaking to him. But look, Westmeath were caught short, I guess, against Monaghan, didn't have the legs, and McHugh basically says, look, this was probably a bit beyond them anyway.
We put a lot of energy into the first half, I think, and we should have probably been a few points ahead. Our discipline cost us an odd time with a 2-pointer free, you know, and you know we spoke about we can't give 2-pointer frees to Rory Began because he will hurt you, and he did it, and you know we went in at level at half time, and ultimately it wasn't a bad situation to be in, Jonathan, but I think our legs caught up as soon as we, but there's no points in any difference. When we're missing, you know, some of our better players and at this level, that catches up in you. You know, Shane Armstrong had an unbelievable first half and tired, obviously, a bit with the heat. You know, Ray only could have 10 minutes in him, and even towards the end there, we could see what he did when he did come on. And, you know, there's boys playing through injury there, Sam and Matthew. We were just hobbling there at the end. We were hobbling there. And I think that comes from the Leinster Championship, the grueling Leinster Championship was supposed to be had, and the grueling Leinster Championship we have, and couple that with maybe 3 extra times as well, and 2 away matches the last 2 weeks. I think somebody says all the home teams won this weekend, you know. So it's difficult. It's difficult going away at this level, and it's wild jeopardy to have a home and away match at this time, at this stage of a competition. You know, I feel so. Maybe they'll look at that for next year.
That was definitely one of the themes that came up. Geezer in the aftermath said, look, it's really difficult to have any conversation when you've been hockeyed out the gate like this to give your personal views. But, and he thought the round robin was working really well and was crediting the round robin for bringing teams like Cork and Westmeath, and he said ourselves on, meaning our man. Like, the round robin was 1 extra week, 1 extra game. People complained about the no jeopardy, but there's no jeopardy the first time round when the winners play the winners. Like, the losers that are also going to go through.
Yeah.
And everybody was guaranteed. So logistically, you knew where you were going. It's very difficult to get hotels and stuff. Like, everybody gets a home game. Maybe the supporters come out because the games are better. I don't know. I think that it would certainly help to remove a little bit of that imbalance.
Yeah. Tommy said this a couple of times as well. Like, to be able to... The Gaelic football is split into 3 different things now as well. Like, you've got the league, you've got the provincials, and you've got the All-Ireland series. And you can approach them all as holistic things in their own right. To be able to compete on all 3 fronts, you have to have...
David Clifford.
You have to have David Clifford. That seems to be the only answer. But you have to have an outrageous amount of depth in your panel.
Yeah.
Or you need to sacrifice
managers,
others, you know. And I don't really know what the way of doing that is. I do. There's loads of conversations to come out the back of the championship, regardless of... The main one is going to be how good it has been, of course. But there's probably a bit of provincial winners and...
To that point, right? Yeah. I heard somebody say... It was James Richardson on his podcast. America could win the World Cup by reaching the quarterfinals. They will feel like they've won it if they reach it. I'm like, I'm not sure, you know. And then, you're like, did Westmeath win the season? They probably did. Mm. But did Roscommon ultimately win the season? They'll feel like they did, right?
Yeah.
Now,
maybe less so, but
not make Croke Park again.
Yeah, but in so, it's certainly a good stepping stone, the staging post to where you need to get to.
Yeah.
Whereas. In the old system, when there were preeminent and dominant teams in each of the respective provinces, with the exception obviously of Ulster, I don't know. Anyway, we ended up with a conversation about structure.
Yeah, I don't know how in the best season that we can remember in 20 years that people are still coming out complaining about the structure and the format.
Is it fair that you get a home knockout tie in the round of 12, whatever?
Yeah,
wildcard weekend.
I don't think there's any reason why this bunch of games
couldn't have been
neutral.
Yeah,
I think it would have just made sense because you've had your first the provincial finalists getting their home game, then you've a random draw of a home or away, then maybe you just go neutral for the last one, and then suddenly we're all in Croke Park, and you know we go from there.
Yeah.
I think that would probably make a little bit more sense.
But
again, it's beside the point, really.
You could just avoid complaints as well. Whether you know, yeah, actually makes thing, a difference like, or not, who knows? But yeah, to avoid any complaints after,
yeah,
after matches.
Donegal's home record wasn't great, but I suppose Dublin's home record wasn't great, so.
Yeah, Donegal didn't really have a home this year as well because they were playing in Boba Fae and the last game against Cork for the first time with the pitch and then playing Larkin.
Yeah, Loud didn't have a home.
There's no excuses. We'll finish off the
injuries.
I love the last word, no excuses.
Monaghan obviously going into the green for this week around. Yeah, we'll move on to Mayo and Meath. So Mayo are through to the All-Ireland quarterfinal after a win against Meath, a dramatic one. This was probably the tightest game over the course of the weekend.
Yeah.
Could have gone either way at any stage of the game. Mayo probably deserve ultimately to go through. Again, Colby McDonald and Ryan O'Donoghue.
Very harsh red cards, I would say. Yeah. I think that.
I would agree.
You don't agree?
I don't think it was a red card.
I said I would agree.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. I just think that, like, it's a dunt. It's not a push. Mm. It's not a punch. Like, it's maybe a yellow card, but, like, I think it did totally. In Jonathan Higgins' post-match, he was like, the game has already begun to turn, but it does turn. It's just there's no way of wrestling it back.
Yeah.
And Meath always have the forwards who might be able to wrestle something back in the last 5 minutes. So
could add a goal easily as well.
Yeah,
Jack Livingston made a great save towards the end.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's a cool customer.
Was it his third championship start?
Yeah. And the first one was the first one or the second one against Monaghan that day. He made about
that was his first game.
Eight saves in a game of Gaelic football. It was a good watch though. It was a good watch for sure. Mayo were really struggling in the first half, really to get anything together. Meath's defence seemed to be as good as it had been, and Meath's defence had been their kind of Achilles heel this season. They were trying the man-to-man stuff and it just wasn't really working out for them. They were conceding goals for fun, but they had it right in the first half anyway, for sure. But Mayo did manage to get a foothold.
Yeah.
The game had turned, but as you say, it's just that problem. When it turns, you can't get it back when you're down to 14 men. That's been a huge thing. I suppose, well, Meath will be kicking themselves too in the fact that when they played Cork in the opening game of the All-Ireland Series, they had the man advantage for the end of the game and couldn't make that count, and then the opposite happened to them and Mayo did make a count.
Yeah, I do think there's something for Robbie Brennan to work on now next year in terms of his side finishing off games, because that's twice now in two big championship games where they had a substantial lead throughout the game and they weren't able to close it out and teams were able to crawl their way back into the game. Now Mayo had a lot more coming off the bench. Tommy Conroy, I thought, was phenomenal.
That's
coming
the best
off
the I've bench. Seen Tommy Conroy in a long time.
Yeah, Matthew Rann came off the bench as well. Like, Mayo were starting to turn these players now over the last couple of weeks. That
are we playing Andy here?
Yeah, we've got Andy Morton.
Because he was talking about those players and babying them through the winter.
The new rules, lads, you just have to stay in the game. But I just thought there was outstanding leadership shown with 10 minutes to go in that second half, or in that first half. I just thought when Enda took the ball and he scores that first point, I said, we just took off. And Joe Collum had said to me on the sideline, if we can stay within 7 or 8 points here, we'll be in the game. And that's what happened. And coming down the stretch, I think the boys just managed the game brilliantly.
What was half-time like? Obviously, you touched on Enda's couple of scores and then Kobe, and then the big block on the buzzer, lack of a buzzer cutter, if you want to call it. That changed. Your perspective a little bit. It was still an uphill task.
It was still an uphill task, but it changed half time completely. That 10 minutes before half time changed exactly what, like, if you were going to make a sub, what you were going to do, it just changed it completely. And it gave us great energy as a management team. It gave the team great belief, because now all of a sudden we have a blueprint of what to do. Jeremy kicked in two great balls just before half time. We got two scores off them, and all of a sudden we said, lads, come on. So, and then they knew it themselves. They knew it themselves. They called it half time to push up and the kick out. They did it, and they did it brilliantly.
Last year, not too many two-pointers for Mayo. I think if I could, from the outside looking in, if I could see one change on the setup that you've put on the team, it is two-point efforts, and they came good again in the second half.
Yeah, like, there's always narratives written, as Rob will tell you here beside me, like, there's always narratives written, but it's, like, we always kind of believe that we had good shooters and we had good players. And Jack Carney was always well able to kick a two-pointer. I didn't change that. Tommy Conroy, the lads will tell you there, he didn't kick a two-pointer, but he kicks 3 points from play. We're waiting for Tommy for 18 months. He's had a dreadful time with injuries. We minded him like a lamb right through the league. We minded him right through the championship. We couldn't get him right for the championship. And then all of a sudden, he's just, in the last 3-4 weeks, he's just got form. And it's really took off. But these forwards were there, and we just need to back them. Joe, how far that'll go this year, let's wait and see.
Yeah, so that was Andy Moore speaking after the game. A special mention to Jack Carney for that two-pointer, as he mentions. It's so slick.
Yeah.
outside of the boot, no questions asked, straight over the bar.
The aesthetic of Gaelic football has improved tenfold. It has. The two pointers, hasn't it?
I think the skill has always been there. It's just now they have incentive to use it.
Exactly. Well, I wanted to bring this up in the Donegal stuff because it actually has driven me mad this year, though. It's not in relation to Jack Carney, more so in relation to players taking the two pointers and having the guts to take those shots on. Shane O'Donnell had a two pointer. He just flies it over the top, and he is the most shot reluctant player in the country. But because he has the advantage, he takes it on. Take the shot on during the game. Like, the amount of time Shane O'Donnell gets himself into unbelievable positions and won't take the shot on. And then as soon as they have an advantage, he has the talent to do that. So I wonder, is there just managers
I think they might
putting
be
the fear of God into them or something?
Still trapped in the old system.
I think you're right. This has been mentioned an awful lot as well. The teams that aren't in Division 1 play with an outrageous amount of freedom, and that might catch them up in the end. It might not get them over the line. It requires a lot more energy and leaves you open to more like kind of muscle injuries and all that sort of stuff, and that has happened. But the teams in Division 1, I think particularly Ulster teams, do play with more of a rigidity that maybe we don't see with some of the other counties. I don't know what is behind that.
Stats. You shoot from here, 40% of the time you're going to score. That's not good enough. It needs to be 70. Give it to somebody who's better than you. Like, but how do you get to 70% shooting? You learn. The aesthetic has improved. Didn't gain his true balls.
He played amazing.
He was unbelievable.
He was class.
What about Paul Gainey?
One side
of the arc to the other.
Yeah, what was past the Clifford was unreal.
What was the goal overnight? Somebody scored, there was a Paul Gainey goal scored in the World Cup. I was like, oh, that's Gainey F.
I didn't see any of the highlights. I saw Cape Verde's free kick.
Was it their equaliser?
Oh, was it?
I think the two all, there's like the Uruguay keeper comes out.
Oh yeah.
The intercept.
It's like Gainey finish.
Jeez, what was Muslera doing in that game? Oh my God.
Kerry, look.
What can you say?
Is all the stuff that we've been talking about not all a bit bullshit? Like,
yeah.
Is it not? Is it not now ordained 8 to 10 points no matter who they get, with the possible exception of Galway? And even then, there's a possibility that Galway stick it up to them for 40-45 minutes and then Kerry beat them 8 to 10 points.
Could well do.
Because that's what happens when Kerry have their players. Last season, we saw it from the quarterfinals on, even from the game before that, but from the quarterfinals on, when they got their team full, it's 8 to 10 points.
Yeah.
And you can play well.
I think they managed themselves very well this season. You look at the league final, obviously, they get hammered by Donegal. Wasn't a great outing, but they were missing a lot of players, but I think it's been deliberate as well. Like, they haven't played players that they probably could have put out there over the last few games. They decided not to, got through the games anyway. You know, and now they're reaping the fruits of that. I think that they will be an example. Look, Kerry, their depth, they probably have more depth than anyone anyway.
They do.
But they're an example of how to manage your players through this format now.
If Kerry don't do a 3/4/5 in a row with this group of players,
they're going to be
disappointed. Here we go.
You're right. They will be disappointed.
It is a generational group of players for sure.
And the age profile is absolutely perfect.
It is. Shane Ryan and Sean O'Shea coming back as well. It's like,
I think the lesson here is to have your key players injured throughout the league.
I think
and have them come back.
They were very smart about how they integrated them back in.
But David's playing every minute.
Can I throw something out? I want to throw a quiz question out to the group. What do you think David Clifford has scored this year?
in all competitions.
This is outrageous, by the way.
In the league?
League and championship.
Oh,
I've got the championship, and then I've got... So you've got, what, six?
He didn't play all the league games. There was one of the away games. We thought that he was only going to play the home games this year.
He was very quiet in the league final for most of it, but he ended up with like 2 goals at the end, didn't he?
10, 123.
650.
All together?
Yeah.
445.
10, 123.
Would you believe Jair's actually the closest?
What?
Ah, stop.
What is it?
David Clifford this season, league and championship, 872.
Oh my God. In Division 1 as well. That's ridiculous.
He scored 110 yesterday. And
same as that goal chance.
In the championship, he has scored 431.
431 in the championship.
Yeah. He surpassed Dean Rock at the weekend for championship scores, didn't he?
I think he's correct in that. I was looking through it last night, yeah.
That's absolutely wild.
Yeah, he's coming for Killian O'Connor in that number one spot.
He's so not even coming for him.
I think he's probably deserving of the multiple crystals that he's received this year. I saw somebody saying that he's more crystals than Waterford does at the stage. But
he was still only 2-1 for Footballer of the Year lunchtime yesterday, but I suspect that might have come in a bit. Kerry are now odds-on favourites.
Yeah.
He is something to marvel at, isn't he? He is just incredible.
So you add him with the two Guineas, with Joe O'Connor.
Paddy Clifford.
Sean O'Shea. It is that thing of like, we can talk to the cows come home about tactics and the game and everything, but when you have those players on the pitch, can you lose?
Like, in fairness though, they are set up very well as well. Like,
no, they are. They've got the perfect profile of player too. They've got the balance of your actual unbelievable footballers combined with your fielders and your Joe O'Connor, who is like a profile of his own.
Yeah.
You know, and when he is fit and firing, which he is now, by God, he's hard stop. And even for the goal that he got, Dylan Gainey's who, the pass, it's just such a...
Excellent, yeah.
The only person in Killarney and the only person who was watching that game that saw that pass... In the way it unfolded was Dylan Gainey.
And he's even him cresting to the peak that we thought he was capable of. Let's move on because we're going to come back to all this in about 10 minutes time.
Yeah, so we will obviously put Kerry into the green for that. Will we touch a little bit on the hurling? I know there's not much to say here, but I think that's probably saying enough at this point. So we've got Cork and Clare coming out victorious against Offaly and Dublin, and I think the real story about hurling this weekend is just the fact that nobody really cared about it, except for the people who wanted to watch it on RT during the Donegal.
Mick.
Yeah.
Was Mick giving out, was he?
He was.
Yeah. So I don't know if people caught this, but I was actually watching the GA on the player. I was watching Donegal on the player, and Joanne Cantwell said, now, if you want to watch the hurling, we're going to be putting it on the player. I don't know what channel they put it on the player because Donegal kept playing, so it might have been a different channel. But
yeah, maybe it was a different stream. I don't know. Mick was saying he couldn't find it.
She initially said RT News Now, and then someone was in her ear maybe and said that it was actually the player, and then it wasn't on the player.
To be fair to her, she corrected it immediately.
It wasn't her fault. I know that.
But I as soon as she said it and corrected herself, I knew it was like, oh, here comes the onslaught. But
like,
come on, you can't leave a game. You can't leave a game.
No, you can't leave an extra time game, not the game that was with the follow either.
Like,
they did say they requested a 1 o'clock throw in, but we're told no.
But that would have made a difference if it went to penalties.
Which, the 1 o'clock?
The 1 o'clock. Like, it would have been fine for extra time, but if that game goes to penalties, what do you do then?
They also did say that, didn't they? Yeah, they requested it to be earlier, and the CCCC were having none of it.
That 15 minutes really makes a huge difference. Maybe someone had to get mass and they weren't going to make it.
It's possible. Well, they had to get every last soul into Crow Park yesterday.
And they did a great job with that, didn't they? What was it? I didn't see the figure.
35, I believe.
So we keep hearing about sellouts all around the country for all these games, and it's like 15,000 in Mayo. Killarney, the back of the goals was totally empty. Kerry fans complained about having to go to Dublin. Killarney's not. It's a schlep up from Dingle.
Clonus was about 80% full, I'd say. 85%.
And like, Andy, you're saying there, I know what you mean when you say people didn't care about the hurling at the weekend, but like, they're showing up in Turles. And even it was mentioned a few times on the commentary that the Offaly fans were hanging around, they weren't leaving, when you wouldn't have blamed them had they have left. So I think it is a shame that games are going like that, because I think people really do care about the hurling. It's just a neutral
thing. Hurling people will always care about the hurling, but more so in the sense of which championship was the championship this year? It's
There's no Gaelic football championship. Right, 100%.
It's a slightly unusual thing of where a couple of years ago you would have been dying for the football to end so you could get the hurling onto the TV, and now you're almost like, oh God, I have to watch hurling now.
But the big story is Munster absolutely annihilating Leinster, and the gap between the two not closing. It's getting worse, and a lot of people are very angry about that. Leinster end up being the ones who are helping to develop sport. Munster end up being the ones who get better. Anyway, it was noticeable that the Limerick hurlers were all at the Kerry game.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
I wonder what they were doing.
I thought it was funny that Colm Cooper and Peter Canavan were also in Turles, because they were obviously doing analysis for the game in Croke Park.
How do you pitch that to them?
Do they just hang around there? Do they go home? Or I don't know. That was funny.
I'd like an audience to answer that. It's funny.
Yeah.
All right. So hurling probably in the red.
Oh, definitely.
Over the course of the weekend.
Cork in the green.
Cork's forward line in the green.
Brian Hayes, oh my God. What a player.
I hear David Reid is doing okay now as well.
Yeah, yes. He was out of hospital, yeah.
Yeah, he's out of hospital and doing well, so that's the update on him after that hit. So then we will finish off with two quick ones. We'll finish off with the World Cup. I think two teams in particular get a little mention here in the green, and that is Cape Verde, firstly, getting a 2-2 draw with Uruguay. I mean, it helps that the Uruguay players absolutely despise their manager, Marcelo Bielsa. We might actually do a piece on that over the course of the week in terms of what is going on there, because they just don't like him.
It's a real Dominic dynamic, yeah. It looks like.
Sampaoli.
Something's going to come out about that.
Yeah. Looks like Cape Verde are actually going to go through, though, potentially. They're currently sitting fourth in the third place table on 2 points, and potentially a draw could be enough.
They'll need another result, I'd imagine.
Yeah, they can't lose their next game, but if they get a draw, they could well go through, which would obviously be huge for them. And then another team in the World Cup worth a mention over the course of the weekend was Curaçao. Mm-hmm. Got their first ever World Cup points after a draw with Ecuador.
It's a great result.
Big result there for the two minnows.
There's a classic between Brazil and the Netherlands in the 1994 World Cup, and there's a free kick which Branco scores, which is a very similar to the goal that Uruguay conceded against Cape Verde. So have a look at that if you want to see your World Cup history. A better wall from, you'd have to say, a better wall from the Dutch in 94. But the same, like, I'm just going to run straight up and belt it.
That's brilliant, yeah.
Yeah.
Terrible defending, though, for that.
I actually would concur with Michael Owen on this. I'm not sure if you heard Michael Owen a couple of months ago talking about the fact when a free kick is that far out, you're probably better off having no wall at all. It arguably makes it more difficult for
because then it doesn't give them a target.
There's not much a target, and there's also no way in which the goalkeeper can be blindsided, which he actually was blindsided because he takes a step the wrong way, and it's like, oh, I need to go. So maybe it would have been better off from that distance. But I just remember that week, a slight tangent, Michael Owen, when he said that there was actually two free kicks that were scored where there was nobody in the wall.
So that immediately disproved him, and now you've decided,
I can see logic.
That free kick by Branco is much better, by the way.
Yeah. It wasn't a great weekend of World Cup football. There was a couple of big games. Netherlands had a big win against Sweden.
They were
really good.
Brian Brobbey. Oh, my God.
Like the Sunderland being one of the best strikers at the World Cup is amazing. Cody Gakpo, I think Liverpool should just change their kits to orange, and he would actually perform quite well. He seems to thrive for his national team as opposed to for Liverpool. Looks like he's actually going to Tottenham.
Well, we'll see. Everybody's going to Tottenham. Rashford's going to Tottenham. Yeah. He's going to Tottenham.
Van Heck.
Robertson.
We'll see. Van Heck is definitely Robertson. They're signed, but these two are like...
What about the black eye? That's brilliant. It looked like they battered him. You're joining.
Probably the most interesting part of the World Cup over the weekend was Gary Lineker's heel turn going on to ITV and doing the intro, which I thought was a nice little bit.
There was also another point where, because obviously he, having worked in the BBC, wouldn't have to throw to adverts at all. But on ITV, obviously, they have the adverts, and Laura Woods is talking and kind of says, actually, Gary, you do it. And he's like, consummate pro, just smashes it out of the park. We'll be back shortly. It was brilliant. I'm loving it. He's just kind of being used as a little coy, but he seems to be enjoying it.
Life has worked out pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. That it for
one last mention. Yeah. Performance rankings. Probably, I mean, it was a Friday night thing, so has fallen.
Oh, Leinster!
Leinster are URC champions.
Back to back.
They got more people in Croker for that than the Dubs got. Yeah, like, is anybody giving out about the what's
going
on?
Yeah,
there's 39,500, so just short of 40. Yeah, it was like, in my mind, it's a decent turnout considering it's the Friday night. There's a lot on. Last weekend as well, like not just in terms of sport, but there was a lot of concerts on. People are paying a lot of money. Olivia Dean was on, Zach Bryan was on. Like, there's a lot going on. And that I know you're laughing there, but that does.
I would have loved to be at Olivia Dean.
Olivia Dean was in the green this weekend.
Definitely matter when it comes to live sport. So, and they're excellent now. The Bulls seem to have this perennial issue now where they just can't show up in finals.
Your pal Kane and Moody disaster after. Was he the first yellow card or the second yellow card?
He was the first yellow card.
It's your fault, whatever you say to him.
Scored a try at the end, to be fair to him. But yeah, no one played well for the Bulls.
But once that yellow card happened, I thought it was a bit harsh. I thought the Prendergast pass was actually behind McCarthy and he wasn't going to get it. And
Nah, that's the yellow card every day of the week in the modern game. I think he's, you know what you're doing if you're like Kenny Moon's not looking at where Joe McCarthy is, he's looking at,
but the pass wasn't gonna, you know, the way, is there anybody covering the, is that a try scoring, so obviously it wasn't,
doesn't really have to be, yeah, it's more of a line break. Yeah, well, to be fair, from then on it did feel like their heads dropped completely and they just didn't really show up. But Leinster, all credit goes to them, because you know there are several picks from man of the match. Tommy Bryan and Caelan Dyers obviously getting injured is the only negative from that game. They'll miss the summer tour now, which is a shame for both. But yeah, it was an excellent performance in general. Prendergast was obviously very good. I don't know if we have time to play that now, but we can maybe come back to it later on.
Yeah, so
we'll be going around the grounds from the weekend later on in the show, yeah. So we'll play it there.
So, we'll have Quinny along a little bit later on too to reflect on Ollie Yeager announcing his immediate retirement after those series of concussions. So we wish him the very best with that.